You guys, I am so excited to bring you today's episode because we have a very special guest today, Lindsay Lussen, who I have been following for a long time. And honestly, I told her before we recorded, I was like a little bit starstruck and I felt kind of like a stalker because I follow her really closely on Instagram and I feel like I know a lot about her. And I just think she's amazing. It was a really cool experience for me to be able to interview someone that I really look up to in the nutrition space. And I'm just really in awe of what she does and the way that she helps women and empowers them, especially with their relationships with food, with getting pregnant naturally. And I think this episode is important for everybody, not only if HA is relevant for you, but just to know. You should know for your friends, for your sisters. Women should know about HA because a lot of people unfortunately don't. So let me tell you a little bit about Lindsay and what she does. Lindsay Lussen is a registered dietitian who specializes in disordered eating and infertility. She has both personal and professional experience with hypothalamic amenorrhea, or HA for short, or period loss related to overexercise and undereating. Her experience led her to become passionate about educating and empowering others to advocate for their health and take charge of their fertility through proper nutrition. She has helped over 250 women recover their cycles and restore their fertility naturally. Listen in to hear Lindsay share what is hypothalamic amenorrhea, or HA, Lindsay's own experience with HA period recovery and her path to motherhood, what happens when women with HA are misdiagnosed with PCOS and the dangers in that, the common risk factors that put people at risk for HA, why ovulation is critical for our overall health, even if you're not trying to get pregnant, why birth control and IVF don't actually treat the root cause of HA, how to manage our relationships with food on our path to fertility, and so much more. I think there is so much wisdom in this episode. Lindsay's really such an expert. It's such a pleasure to talk to someone who's just so good at what they do and so well spoken about all of it. And I think you guys are really going to enjoy this episode. So let's dive in and hear from Lindsay. Welcome to the About Health and Hormones podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Allen, a recovered sugar addict turned certified nutrition coach on a mission to help women learn how to balance their hormones and optimize their fertility. On this podcast, we have conversations with experts about all things health, hormones, wellness, nutrition, and more to give you the information, tips, and tricks you need to take control of your health and feel amazing in your body. I am so happy that you're here and I can't wait to dive in. Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the show.
Yes, Lauren. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I'm so excited. I told you already off air. I'm like a little bit starstruck because I'm such a fan of yours on social media. And I think what you do is just amazing. I'm so excited for you to share all of your knowledge with our listeners. And I want to just start with, you know, they're going to see the title of this episode and be like, hypothalamic, what? Like, what is this even? So can you just get us started with by explaining what is HA?
Yeah, and HA stands for hypothalamic amenorrhea. It is a mouthful, so we'll just call it HA. Or if I start talking about missing periods at any point during our audio, that's what I'm talking about is HA. So hypothalamic amenorrhea means that there is a miscommunication between your brain. That's where the hypothalamic comes from. Where in the word comes from, because the hypothalamus is kind of like your brain's control center. It controls a variety of body functions. Your appetite, your response to emotional regulation, and it's also in communication with the control and release of hormones. And so the way that it's named means that there's something wrong with it, with your brain and the way that your brain is communicating with your ovaries. And it basically shuts down your menstrual cycle. So amenorrhea means no period at all. It's typically recognized as not having a period at all for 3 months in somebody that was previously having periods, or somebody who doesn't have a period at all for 6 months in somebody who was having irregular cycles. So if you had cycles that were coming every 45 days or every 90 days, and then all of a sudden it's 6 months later and you haven't had a period at all, that can also be classified as amenorrhea. And you can lose your period for a number of reasons. You know, one common one is PCOS, but, you know, to kind of stay on topic here with hypothalamic amenorrhea, the reason why your period goes missing is due to stress. And inadequate energy availability, AKA you're not eating enough for the amount of exercise that you're doing, enough for your individual metabolism. There is this huge kind of nutrition deficit that's kind of at the heart of HA.
Okay, thank you for explaining it, because I want to ask you about your story, and it's helpful to know and lay the groundwork of what HA is before we get into that. So can you tell us, you know, just how you got to be working with women and helping them recover from HA?
Yeah, I mean, this is so near and dear to me, Lauren, because this is like my whole story. So when I went towards the end of high school, got really into fitness and nutrition and lost some weight and also lost my period. Now, I was, 17, 18 year old at the time, didn't know a lot about hormones or birth control or anything. And my doctors kind of swept it under the rug, put me on the pill. All the while I was getting, regular periods. I'm using air quotes if you're not watching, the video portion of this, but I was getting a monthly withdrawal bleed from my birth control, being like, okay, like everything's fine. All the while kind of slowly spiraling into an eating disorder. That all kind of peaked when I was about 25. I did seek out treatment for my eating disorder. Did pretty much recover, weight restored, got to a way healthier place with how I view food and how I was fueling my body. But I still never actually got my period back. And, at the time, again, in my mid-20s, wasn't thinking about fertility. And so the options were, birth control or start fertility treatment if that was my goal. And so kind of went back on the pill, kind of went back off the pill. I always kind of knew, like, in the back of my mind that this was going to be a problem for when I wanted to start my family. And so I was always kind of in and out of the research. I went to grad school for nutrition, exercise, and sports nutrition, thought about getting my doctorate in kind of studying this idea of like female athlete triad or missing periods in active women. But there just wasn't a lot of, I never fit the mold for an athlete. So it was always just kind of this big question mark. Every time I go to the doctor, why is your period missing? We don't know. Let's not worry about it. Let's just put you on birth control to protect your bones. Fast forward to a couple of years later, I was married and we were ready to start our family. And, I had watched friends go through fertility treatment. I knew what was ahead of me. And I was like, is there anything else that I could do? And kind of by the grace of God, I stumbled upon hypothalamic amenorrhea, HA, learned a lot about it and learned about kind of the whole idea of like the nutrition component. And, it wasn't easy because, like, even though I am a nutrition professional as a registered dietitian, I think for a lot of people with this condition, there's kind of this denial, like, oh my gosh, like, I know what I'm talking about. Like, of course, this isn't me, da, da, da. But, when push came to shove, it was like, okay, like, if I want to start my family, like, I have an option to, work on healing this naturally, or, like, basically my options idea. So at this crossroads, I decided to make a lot of changes with my diet, gain some healthy weight, put exercise on the back burner, and I was able to get my period back. I was able to get pregnant naturally. And now I help women all over the world do the same thing.
It's so incredible. I get the chills from your story because I think, you mentioned like the doctors were kind of just saying, oh, whatever, we don't know why you're not getting your period, but like, we'll just put you on birth control or you'll do fertility treatments when you want to start a family. Not really focusing on the importance of having a period, just in and of itself. And I would love to hear you talk a little bit about why that would even be important. Why should you get a period even if you're not necessarily trying to ovulate and start a family that day?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a huge disservice, I think, whenever missing periods or any sort of cycle irregularity are kind of you're thrown birth control saying this is going to fix, the problem. For amenorrhea in particular, if you're not getting a period, your body is low in the hormone estrogen. And estrogen is really important for our bone health and our heart health. So if we aren't making adequate levels of progesterone, we're at an increased risk for osteopenia, osteoporosis. If those things don't track or resonate with you, stress fractures, if you're an active one. So we do see a lot of stress fractures in women with missing periods. And when we aren't having a regular period, you're also thinking about, like, I think when we start thinking about the context of like osteoporosis or weak, brittle bones, we're thinking about this like slumped over 80-year-old woman. Well, if you haven't had your period in, 5, 7, 10, 15 years, like that could be the picture of you in your 30s. And I see that in some of my clients as they'll come to me with these, you know, with these really scary diagnoses with their bones, in particular heart too. You know, the Nurses Health Study is a very large, probably the largest study ever done on women's health. It was done in over 82,000 women. And one of the findings from the Nurses Health Study was that women with missing or irregular periods have about a 51% increase in cardiovascular disease. And that's the number one killer in women is heart disease. And so I think that there's going to be more that kind of comes out there, but that's a biggie. The other one that I think that people don't really think about, especially if, you know, you're like myself and maybe you've been missing your period for so long and you're listening and this resonates, is like, there's some mood things that kind of come with not having that cyclical flow of estrogen and progesterone. And so a lot of people are more prone to anxiety, depression. They might be operating, you know, in kind of this like constant fight or flight state and not being able to get into a state of just being able to relax and go with the flow. I hear that a lot in my clients. And then it also impacts relationships. So, you know, when the body is kind of operating in this low energy state, not only has it shut down your menstrual cycle, is digestion typically suffers. We already touched on bone, but also just kind of like your mental capacity to be present and to pour into relationships. A lot of times people with this condition can excel very well in like, you know, kind of one or two things. But when it comes to like personality and being able to laugh and be spontaneous, a lot of that's just kind of like dulled down because you're essentially in robot mode. And so that's something too that I think is really encouraging when we talk about, you know, getting your period back or why you would want to get your period back, is relationships can really thrive. Your quality of life can improve. And then of course, like the physical things with the, you know, the mood disorders, bones and heart, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're just living such a richer and healthier life when you get your period back. But I know, I'm sure a lot of women who are struggling with HA, and maybe you also had this, had to overcome a lot of mental hurdles, realizing, wait, I'm going to have to eat more or eat differently, especially like you mentioned, you were super into health and fitness and you're like, of course I know what I'm doing. Can you talk a little bit about that piece? Like if someone's listening to this and they haven't had a period in a while and they're like, okay, but that doesn't sound right. Like I'm going to have to eat more or gain weight. Like, can you speak a little bit to those fears?
Yeah. And I think that this comes up more in women who already are a normal weight, right? Because I think that when sometimes people think about this condition of a missing period, they think eating disorder. And I think somebody mm-hmm. who's emaciated or struggling with anorexia, in my experience, that's not typically who develops HA. I mean, that can happen, absolutely. But the clients that I'm working with are normal body weight. And so I think that's hard to kind of reconcile. Like, why should I gain weight when on paper I'm perfectly healthy? So that's a challenge, you know, that kind of has to overcome. And what I always tell people is that, you know, everybody's bodies are designed to be different shapes and sizes, right? Just because you are a healthy weight on paper or BMI is normal doesn't mean that that's a healthy weight for you. And I think that that's where kind of the second complexity with this idea of gaining weight for period recovery comes in, is a lot of times people worked really freaking hard to get in the body that they're in. And they might have a lot of pride and sometimes even an identity around being the fit person. And so when we talk about why people typically can't just like snap out of it and gain the weight and, you know, get over themselves, it's because it's like a core part of who they are. And so that's something that we really start unpacking in my coaching program too, is like kind of developing this sense of self outside of the fit girl. And that can still be part of your life even after you get your period back. But a lot of times what I notice with HA is people have their entire identity wrapped up in having a six pack or running the marathons or being the strongest girl in the gym. And that can be hard. That can be a hard thing to be ready to let go of or not allow it to be your whole life.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I almost feel like I came from such the opposite place. Like, I don't know if you know my story, but I was like the cookie queen. Like I was known in my neighborhood for making the best chocolate chip cookies. I was a super sugar addict. And like, I thought people who ate healthy were just sad and lying. And like, I didn't understand why anyone would do it. And then I was diagnosed with PCOS. I went through that whole thing. They said, you know, you'll never get pregnant. Naturally, you'll have to go through treatments. And I ended up like finding all of this amazing healing through eating much healthier. And it was very hard for me to let go of the identity. Like, but I'm the girl who's so fun. Like I go out for pizza at midnight. I go out for ice cream, no matter what. Like I'm the girl that people call. And it was really interesting. Like on the other side, I found that so much of my identity was very tied to the way I ate and like, I'm so cool because I don't eat healthy way. And it's something I've like also really tried to sometimes struggle with, not so much, but like balance as I now eat a lot healthier to support PCOS, like making sure that doesn't become, you know, I'm not eating healthy because that's the value in and of itself. It's like, what does it bring me? Brought me my babies. It like helps me feel much better and have more energy. But speaking of PCOS, I think part of the way I discovered you was because I saw some posts that you did about the how common it is for women with HA to get misdiagnosed with PCOS. And I would love to hear you speak a little bit about that and explain why that happens and what some of the dangers are when a woman with HA is diagnosed as having polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Yeah. Well, the way that PCOS is diagnosed at this point in time, I'm hopeful that there's going to be some things that are changing about the way that it is diagnosed, because this will make a lot of sense whenever I explain this. The way that it's diagnosed is you have to have 2 out of 3 of the following: a missing or irregular period, cyst on your ovaries, and or elevated androgen, so elevated testosterone or DHEA. And pretty much everyone with HA is going to have 2 of the 3. They're going to have a missing or irregular period. And because cysts are just a different name for follicles, which are immature eggs around your ovaries, a woman with HA can absolutely have this profile. And so if she goes to her doctor and they say your labs are normal, they do an ultrasound and they see cysts on your ovaries without really looking for that, you know, actual pattern of what polycystic ovaries look like with PCOS, then it's really easy for somebody, again, it was a normal BMI, to walk away with the PCOS diagnosis. And the dangers here, as I'm sure you've explained, you know, on your podcast previously, is like some of the things that we want to do for lifestyle management for PCOS are going to be a little bit contradictory for what you need to do to heal with HA. So with PCOS, you know, we're wanting to make sure that we are staying very active and making sure that we're including lots of fresh, whole foods and that we are, you know, eating enough, but not eating in a calorie surplus, which is what you actually need to do to heal from HA. So with HA, it's all about toning down the exercise, adding more calories and food and carbohydrates back in. And with PCOS, I don't want to say it's exactly the opposite, but what I notice in people that get the PCOS misdiagnosis is they start to dial up their habits. So maybe they were running 5 days a week. Oh my gosh, I've got PCOS. Now I'm going to start running 7 days a week. You know, my meals are pretty balanced, but now I've got PCOS and I'm worried about insulin resistance. So now I'm not going to eat any carbs. A lot of times people with this HA diagnosis just have this kind of mindset where we do things, you know, if it's a 10 out of 10, we're doing an 11 out of 10. And so I see people really run with these lifestyle recommendations for PCOS that are great for someone with PCOS. But again, if it's not the condition that you have and you have that personality type to take things to an extreme, you're actually going to be doing more damage to your hormones and making it harder for you to be able to ovulate and get your period back.
I'm so glad you explained it, because I just feel for all these women who are putting in the effort and they're trying and they're probably spending a lot of time and a lot of emotional energy to do these things in the hopes of recovering. And unfortunately, like, those are just not the habits they need to be practicing to recover. And I'm wondering if most women who come to you, do they get a diagnosis from their doctors that they have HA? Like, how common is it? Because I know that when I've had consultations with people who think they have PCOS and they describe their diet and lifestyle, and I'm like, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but I bring up HA and I'm like, you know, is it possible you're undernourishing? Is it possible you're overexercising, or are you stressed? And they're like, yes, yes, and yes. I mean, they tell me their diets, they're eating like a stellar, super healthy diet. I'm like, this just doesn't sound like typical PCOS, but no one is getting diagnosed with it. At least in my experience, I rarely hear of doctors diagnosing it. And I'm curious for you, like, how are women who are getting to, how are they finding out that they have this?
Yeah. Some people self-diagnose. And that was actually my story. So like, I mean, if we wanted to pull up my medical chart right now, you would never see the HA's nowhere in there. Wow. So some people self-diagnose just based off of reading information on the internet. You know, I've had people reach out to me on Instagram and say, hey, like, I was diagnosed with PCOS, but now I kind of think that that's not this. And they'll start to like implement some things that I recommend, or like, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. So, you know, sometimes I don't want to say like trial and error, because that's not really the best method. You're more likely to get a correct diagnosis of HA if you go see a reproductive endocrinologist than your typical OB, just because they're more specialized. They're looking at things through a more comprehensive lens. And OBs are overworked, and, you know, and they see, you know, 20 patients a day. So what is that? 100 patients a week. They might only see two, you know, out of those 100 with actual HA. So they're not looking for it. And, you know, quite frankly, they probably don't have the time to ask the right questions to get somebody properly diagnosed. So I think there's a big disconnect there. But people, you will be more likely to get the right diagnosis if you're working with the right doctor. But I also have people that come to me that, again, kind of self-diagnosed based off of, you know, and you can look at, I mean, and it's without a, it's outside of my scope of practice as a registered dietitian to diagnose anyone. But if somebody feels strongly and we talk about their history and we look pretty closely at their labs, we can make an educated decision about whether or not they would benefit from doing some things to manage or treat the HA component, even if they don't have that actual diagnosis in their chart.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And when it comes to things that can be done to help someone with HA recover their period, especially, I know you work with a lot of women who are specifically trying to get pregnant. What are some of the tips or like starting points for people?
Yeah, well, the first one is to make sure that you're eating enough, and that's really relative. And a lot of women that have HA have a skewed perception about what is the right amount of food for their bodies. A lot of people are underfueling in some capacity, whether it's fasting, whether it's restricting carbohydrates, whether it's, you know, counting calories. And so, you know, step one is kind of moving away from some of those restrictive habits. So I always have my clients kind of do like a comprehensive assessment of like, how did we get here? Right? Like if we went on the keto diet, we lost our period, maybe we need to figure out how to add more carbs back in. If, you know, we struggled with an eating disorder, have we addressed that? Have we really healed from that? Or are there still pieces that are still sticking with us today that are preventing us from properly fueling ourselves? And so kind of assessing the individual and their unique story about how they got there and filling in the gaps there. But step one is to make sure that you're eating enough, eating regularly, and eating a good balance of carbohydrates, protein, and fat. A lot of people that I've noticed are really skimping on the carbs and fat. Protein, for whatever reason, doesn't seem to be that big of a deal for most people. But we start filling in the gaps with their nutrition. And then, you know, the other kind of big parts of it, you know, I always think about it, if we're like, look at like a pyramid, the foundation of the pyramid has always got to be nutritional adequacy. Like if the energy availability is that is not there, that communication pathway is not going to switch back on. You're not going to be able to ovulate. You're not going to be able to get your period back. So that is foundational. The other piece is lowering stress. And when we talk about lowering stress, I think that it's really important to understand that when your body is in a constant low state of energy, when you are expending more calories through exercise than what you're taking in, that is stressful on your body. So we want to address that stressor. We also want to address the physical stress that your body is under from exercise. And so this is never anyone's favorite part of period recovery, but there does need to be a reduction in the intensity and the duration of the exercise that you're doing. And then the final component is addressing the psychological stress. So again, if there is a lot of fear around certain foods, I see a lot of people kind of start crossing over into that orthorexia line where it's like they eat super healthy. They really box themselves in. And there's a lot of fear around going out to a restaurant. There's a lot of fear around eating the wrong thing, whether it's fear about it's going to mess up your digestion, it's going to impact your health, or it's going to make you fat. Everybody has different fears, but you know, addressing the stress component about how somebody sees food and views food. And a lot of that, that's also a place where kind of some body image stuff starts to show up. So addressing those stressors, making sure that somebody has healthy coping mechanisms and that they're not being overly reliant on exercise as their only form of coping.
Wow. And I'm wondering if there's like a typical prototype. I mean, I know anyone can develop HA, but do you typically see, like, I guess in my head before I saw your page and saw you work with so many different types of women, I would have thought like, oh, probably Olympic gymnasts. Like it's a thing, they don't get their periods, or I don't know, I would think of Olympic athletes. But are there certain prototypes of, let's say, someone who's either like super type A or personal trainers, or like, is there someone who's maybe at higher risk than someone else because of their job or personality type, or it's really just like, it could be anyone?
Well, athletes are absolutely at a higher risk, right? Because they have the, you know, the energy expenditure component. So whether somebody is unknowingly just constantly underfueling for their sport, even if they're excelling, then yes, amenorrhea could definitely show up there. However, I think that that is more of our, like, you know, textbook pictures. We're thinking about a marathon runner developing HA. What I've observed in my practice is there's lots of people that are exercising recreationally, but I think that this also kind of makes sense with, like, the rise in fitness culture, right? Like, there is this rise over the past 20 years of women being in the gym, women being really strong, women doing, you know, CrossFit and F45 and Orange Theory Fitness. And these things aren't bad, but when somebody's doing that 5 to 7 days a week and they don't know how to fuel for it, people working out like athletes that aren't fueling like athletes, I think that starts a problem. If I can think about, like, a very common theme of a personality type, I'm thinking about a very high performing type A perfectionistic woman. She's probably fantastic at her job. She probably, from the outside looking in, has it all figured out. She's very put together, but internally there's so much stress and pressure to maintain this appearance that it's kind of eating her alive. And, you know, she might turn to food restriction. She might turn to over exercise as a way to control all of the things that she feels like she can control.
Yeah. Wow. I'm curious what recovery looks like for people, because I know also you've talked about the timelines of how, you know, what period recovery can look like. I was really surprised by it when I saw those things on your Instagram. I would think, you know, someone who hasn't had a period for 15 years, it's going to take a really long time, like maybe half that time, 7 years to recover it. And I would love to hear you talk a little bit about that and give some hope to people who maybe are struggling with this, that it doesn't necessarily have to be decades to recover their periods.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that is really encouraging that there isn't technically a correlation between the amount of time that you've been missing your period and how long it'll take you to recover. I've worked with clients who haven't had a period in 15 years and they get their period back in a month. So there's going to be some individual variability just because everybody's bodies respond differently to a proper recovery plan. But once you are following a correct plan for period recovery, it can take anywhere in between 1 and 6 months, depending upon how dedicated you are to the plan. For my clients that are getting a high level of support and they're getting coaching through the process, we usually see people recover their period in about 2 to 3 months.
Oh my gosh. Like, I really hope people who are listening, if you've been missing your period, you hear that 2 to 3 months. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I know it's hard work, but it's not that long. And especially for women who are trying to start their families, I mean, it's amazing. It's really amazing. I know you're a mom. You have three, right? You have three little ones.
Yeah.
I would love to hear, just also as a mom, how do you talk about food in your home? Or, you know, I'm sure you're very conscious about making sure that your children grow up with a healthy image and relationship with food. I would just love to hear some of the things that you either do or don't do to try and encourage just like a healthier, happier relationship around food.
Yeah, sure. And to be clear, I'm not a pediatric dietitian, so this isn't totally my area of expertise. But what I will say is that for me, it's a little bit of sacrifice in the short game for a long game goal. What I mean by that is, compared to Johnny and Susie next door, my kids might eat more sugar and they might eat more processed foods. But to me, it is more important that they grow up seeing food as neutral. Broccoli is the same as M&Ms. And when you kind of foster that foundation, it allows your kids to grow up and to have a positive relationship with food. And then as you are sprinkling in little bits of age-appropriate nutrition, they get to kind of have some autonomy in deciding the foods that they want to eat. Now, with that, as a parent, that doesn't mean that my kids can ask for ice cream at 7 a.m. and I'm going to serve it. I think that we as parents also, you know, get to be parents, right? Just like if your kid wanted to watch 8 hours of screen time, you would probably be like, no, we're going to have some boundaries here. But I'm a really big fan of Ellen Sattler, and she talks about the idea of I provide, you decide. You get to provide your kids with whatever the meal or snack is, and you can also have some structure for designated meal and snack times. But to not micromanage how much your kids are eating and to not put broccoli on a pedestal and then talk about how sugar is so bad for you. So I'm very much of the mindset, let's help our kids have a positive relationship with food. Let's make food fun. Let's, you know, do some education on nutrition, but not hammer it down to where food becomes scary. I think that that's where some disordered eating can start to creep in at a very young age. Also, to tying food back to body size, I think is breeding grounds for disordered eating.
Yeah. And I know nowadays kids are getting on social media younger and younger. And I feel like there's just a lot of content out there. That's first of all, but a lot of probably really damaging nutrition content out there, especially I'm thinking of like teenage girls in particular who are already really self-conscious about their bodies because it's changing so quickly and there's so much going on. And yeah, I think that's just really helpful, like good practical advice for other moms out there who are, you know, trying in this crazy world to raise healthy kids.
And I think it's hard, right? Because as adults, like we do have, it's hard to not bring our own stuff into our kids' relationships, right? So like as someone that struggled with an eating disorder, I'm like, I really want them to have a positive relationship with food. You know, and for somebody who maybe grew up getting bullied for their weight, or maybe they struggled with a different type of eating disorder, they might almost be protective about, wow, I never want my kids to, you know, have to deal with being bullied for their bodies. And so I want to teach them to eat healthy. I don't want them to overeat. And so I just want to kind of bring that in too, and just kind of normalize that like sometimes we're coming in with their own biases. And, you know, as parents, we want to protect and foster the right environment. And, you know, you do the best that you can. You like, it doesn't have to be perfect, but I think that the more that you can kind of educate yourself on that balance about how to feed your kids well, Growing Intuitive Eaters is an Instagram account that I really like. I think that's Dr. Taylor Arnold. And then Kids Eat in Color, which is another really good one too. So again, this is totally not my area of expertise, but those are two accounts that like I've found to be super helpful. People kind of want to learn more about that.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think it's also just always helpful. And I appreciate you differentiating, but like to hear a mom's perspective who also knows a lot about health and nutrition and like sees women who don't have the healthiest relationship with food, even if you're not a pediatric dietitian. I would love to hear, because I've heard you speak about them on Instagram. I get so emotional. Some of the benefits that happen when women recover their periods that maybe aren't like the most classic examples, like, yes, okay, you recovered your period and you can get pregnant and you'll have better bone health and, you know, lower risk of cardiovascular disease, which are all amazing. But what are some of like the less obvious changes that, you know, really impact quality of life or well-being?
Yeah. I mean, you know, to speak a little bit more on like the parenting side of it, I've, you know, had moms be like, I never thought I was going to be able to eat a cupcake at my kid's birthday party. I just always thought I would be that mom that wasn't doing that. Or I'd take my kids to get ice cream, but I would just sit there and agonize over how I wish I could have the ice cream, but I couldn't. So really being able to connect, using food as a form of connection, I think is a huge one. I also have worked with several clients where they're eating separate meals from their partner or from their family, because it has to be perfect. It has to be perfectly controlled. It has to be the perfect meal. And it can be really isolating, especially when we think about holidays or the ability to dine out. And so I think that that's an underrated part of recovery too, is just being able to allow other people to cook for you, go out to eat with friends, be more spontaneous with food. And I think that with that, something that's under-recognized is just the opportunities that opens up for people in terms of, if maybe somebody's listening and they're single, like opportunities with dating, right? Like it's hard to be in a relationship and go do fun, spontaneous dates whenever everything has to be, you know, so controlled in your little box. So I think that that's a big one. The other one is the time that opens up for people when they're not spending, you know, an hour or two a day, 7 days a week working out, is you have time to meet people for coffee dates. I've had clients like, you know, pick up a side business. I had a client start like a travel agency business because it was something she always wanted to do, but because she was so wrapped up in her exercise routine and always having to spend hours a week meal prepping. And there was just so many hours in her week that were dedicated towards her healthy lifestyle shouldn't have time to go pursue some of her hobbies. So that's kind of another example of something really cool that I've seen come out of recovery that I don't think people initially come to me for, but they're kind of like these little hidden gems along the way.
Yeah, it's like the side effects they didn't sign up for, but probably really enhance their lives in ways that they're just like, oh, this is really living. It's amazing. Yeah. Lindsay, I so appreciate your work. I hope everybody follows you on social media because you're a good follow. Even if you don't have HA, like I don't have that. I don't feel like I resonate necessarily with all of the struggles of women who have HA, but I just, the way that you present the information and education about it and just like fostering a healthy relationship with our bodies and food and exercise, I think can benefit anybody. So can you please tell our listeners where they could find you and then also share more just about how you work with anyone if they are struggling with HA?
Yeah, definitely. Well, so if you want to follow along on Instagram, I am at food.freedom.fertility. I'm probably most active on Instagram. But if anything I said today kind of, you know, resonates with you and you think like, hey, I could probably use some fine tuning with my nutrition. I haven't had my period in 3 months or 3 years. I have a free download period recovery meal plan, and that's a great place to get plugged in and get started. That'll also get you on my email list. So you'll be able to learn more about my podcast and blog posts and just information on HA. And if anybody wants to know more about what I do with coaching, I have a group coaching program that is an 8-week program, recovery or period. I also work with women on getting pregnant with HA. And you can learn more about those things on my website, www.foodfreedomandfertility.com.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for coming on, Lindsay. I so appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the About Health and Hormones podcast. If you loved today's episode, I would love to know. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify so I can make this podcast even better for you all. I would love to connect with you. Follow me on Instagram at Lauren Allen Nutrition or head to my website, www.laurenallennutrition.com, to learn about my coaching programs and stay up to date on all of my latest workshops and courses. I am so glad you are here today, and I wish you all health and happiness.